नमस्ते। सो वी हैव हर्ड द वर्ड ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन। इट्स ए वर्ड विच इज यूज्ड इन डिफरेंट मीनिंग्स, बट शुरबिंदो यूजेज इट इन ए वेरी स्पेसिफिक सेंस, ए वेरी स्पेसिफिक मीनिंग। इट इज नॉट एज ही सेज सेंटहुड, एथिकल परफेक्शन, बट समथिंग एल्स कंप्लीटली different and radical. And in one word, it implies that the consciousness with which we operate at this point of time, first there is a change of consciousness. By change of consciousness means that, well, if we take human beings, or let's take animal and human beings, so animal operates primarily with the vital consciousness, and human beings operate, are meant to operate largely by the mental consciousness. But the human consciousness does not exhaust all the possibilities of the ranges of consciousness. So people often become a little perplexed first about the word consciousness. That's why when we talk about this subject, it's a vast subject. So what is consciousness? After all, we say normally that it is awareness. But awareness is a phenomena. I become aware, therefore I am conscious. But what makes me aware? So it is the power that makes us aware. Similarly, along with awareness comes the choice, that means the will, action. So what makes us will in a certain way? So there, consciousness thereby means the power that makes us aware. In other words, there is knowledge in it. And along with the knowledge, there is the power of execution. So it's the power of knowing and the power of execution. So this is what consciousness is. Now, though there is one consciousness, this is arranged hierarchically. And we have talked about it number of times, so I'll not go into it detail. This consciousness limits itself to suit the needs of a particular form. First, it builds the form by its pressure. And then it limits itself. So what is meant by building the form by its pressure? It means that as one, for instance, if there is within us a kind of state in which we feel stifled in our life and we want to, some people want to learn more, know more. You know, one example is of Kalidas. So Kalidas wants to know more and he feels he cannot. But he aspires for wanting to know more. Now his brain, his body, it cannot take in that kind of knowledge, which we can call as real knowledge. But then for that he is blessed by Kali and his consciousness changes or upgrades itself. In other words, in animals there is a limited power of knowledge and a limited power of execution. That much power and knowledge which is enough for the species. In human beings, there is a range. It's not just every human being has the same knowledge and will. In human beings, there is a range from, again, the brute, the most primitive humanity, where the power of knowledge and power of execution is very limited. How much ever you may tell him, it will remain limited. Even if you tell him all about God, it's the classic example that Shri Krishna reveals himself to Duryodhan and Duryodhan thinks he is a charlatan. And thereby this consciousness and its power of knowledge and will becomes more and more liberated. By liberated means ultimately the one consciousness, the supreme consciousness, it is liberating itself from the form, and each time it liberates itself, it puts a pressure on the form to change and adapt. That's all that if we understand, we have the secret. So in olden yogas, the effort was to liberate the consciousness from the form. Once it is liberated, it can soar, it can ascend, it can go to the highest. And after fusing with the highest, they didn't care about the form. The form would at some point break down. Because of the world forces, because its action is exhausted. And this liberated consciousness goes and fuses with its ultimate origin. Because it's always straining towards fusing with its origin. But in evolution, it has to be a step-wise process. Meaning thereby, from one layer of humanity to another layer of humanity. So this release is step by step. Because if there is a sudden release, imagine if you take a car and you start it and put it on fourth gear or the fifth gear, the car is likely to meet with an accident. Or suddenly you upgrade the amount of energy which is there in any system. So this energy is likely to explode. That's how the bombs operate. There is a sudden release of energy and it's so tremendous that the body or the shell cannot hold it or contain it. Therefore it explodes. So that's not evolution. Evolution is where slowly consciousness ascends to a little higher than human and exerts its pressure on the human form. It begins to change the brain, it begins to, you know, have an effect upon the body, its functioning, etc. That's how higher healing takes place, because slowly the body begins to adapt to the higher consciousness and there are grades and grades. For instance, at the intuitive level, suddenly the body becomes so tuned to the intuitive consciousness that it will make the right gesture at the right moment. I have talked about it, so many stories. Nalnida says even while playing football, see how it is a very practical thing. Or the emotions, they will make the right response. Emotions carry a knowledge, emotions carry a power. So as we ascend, there is a certain degree of change that begins to take place in our inner being. Meaning thereby, because the consciousness is liberated, the inner consciousness begins to change and it puts pressure on the form. Now, how far can the human form take this ascension of consciousness? That's where comes the catch. Up to a certain point, there is a ceiling limit. And that ceiling limit is decided by the prototype of the form in the occult worlds. So, behind the form, there is already a planning, blueprint. So, the blueprint of man comes from the overmind. That's how the mother describes. From the junction between the overmind and the supermind. So, up to that point, while in the human body, the consciousness can ascend. If it has to make an ascension further, the form has to adapt tremendously. It has to literally change. That is what is the challenge of yoga. So, this yoga transformation means by its very nature, not just ascension of consciousness, which has an impact on the form to an extent. We hear about, you know, yogis who have certain degree of mastery over their even physical body, its needs, its food, sleep, etc. They can conquer it. Even the body can be raised a little bit, uplifted, and many other siddhis. But it will happen only up to the level from where the human prototype has come. But the human prototype has come from very high levels, overmind, yet it has its own limitations. The overmind consciousness, as we know, still it opens the doors to division. It understands unity, which is very high. That's why taking a human birth is regarded as very special. Because if one can liberate the consciousness, one can reach right up to the doors from where it can enter into the ultimate. But can evolution go further? And Sri Aurobindo says, not only it can go further, it is destined to go further. But that is a critical level, because up to the overmind, there is the continuation of limitation, not ignorance, but some kind of limitation in one way or the other. But beyond the overmind, there is no limitation. There is omnipotence, there is omniscience. Now, that consciousness to be embodied means the entire form has to now change. That's what is known as the supramental body, which is already exists, but there is no center here which can embody it. So this is the basic idea, that first the consciousness has to come in contact in some way with the supramental consciousness. What is the process? By straining itself. All evolution is like that. Why will we strain? When we find this world of forms that we inhabit inadequate, physically, emotionally, intellectually. So a lot of experiences of life come only to tell us the limitations. But on the other hand, if we are very attached to life as it is, then we can forget about transformation. transformation begins when we begin to understand this life that we lead with all its, they are wonderful things. Not that we have to, you can't go for transformation as a, you know, nirash bhav. It's not that. Everything is there. Still it is limited. And that is very easy to understand. So, there is something which starts seeking for something higher, greater. Initially, it takes the form of an ideal, and we try to lead our life according to some kind of an idealistic fervor. So there is a canto in Savitri, Heavens of the Ideal. The ideal carries that fragrance of something which is beautiful, high, and momentarily it breathes in us a different consciousness than the human. People do that. They do extraordinary things when they are driven by an ideal. And yet, it cannot completely change us. So, we know that how the ideal fails when it touches ground reality. That is the fate of all these great ideals. That's why we see in Savitri, the dream twilight of the earthly real. The heavens, there is the twilight of the ideal and then the earthly real. It dashes. It does not have the power to modify earthly life enough to let an ideal world be created here. So one has to go beyond the ideal. That means one has already gone through this process where one is able to see that even ideas and ideals of the highest order, they are unable to manifest in earthly life. And then when one aspires for something still greater, not to annul oneself, but for this earthly life to become beautiful, in one word, the divine, perfect and divine. Then, as a result of this aspiration, a door is supposed to open. Why supposed to open? Because this aspiration has been there in man. But it didn't open. Because if it opens prematurely, it will blow up the system. So for a long time, humanity has aspired and aspired and aspired. Not all of humanity, but there have always been people who have wanted this earthly life to be perfect. And they've aspired and aspired. And they've been uplifted. But this world could not change. It could not change simply because there, if you open the doors to that which can fulfill the aspiration, then this form will blow up. This is the challenge. That's why in Savitri we see a very interesting line about Savitri's birth. A world's desire compelled her mortal birth. So mankind has been aspiring for this for thousands of years. But it didn't know how. Even when it knew, oh, let that power come into us. Let that divine power which can change everything wonderfully. Often we wonder that when we are sick, we call the divine. Why doesn't the miracle take place like this? Because for that miracle, the divine power has to touch the body. The body cannot take it. It's almost like saying that if you drink antiseptic or inject antiseptic of the most strongest kind, it will kill all the bacteria. It will. But it will kill all your body cells. Body cells can't take that. It's actually like saying that. So for a long time, humanity has aspired. We don't know how many years, maybe tens of thousands of years. In the time of Lord Ram, we see that there is a aspiration for an ideal Rama Rajya, then Shri Krishna. And now the time has come, Shesh, Aurobindo and the mother, for that to be realized here, that aspiration of a perfect earthly life. But the challenge is form cannot adapt. If that power comes, it will blow up the form. So somebody has to take the challenge. So who takes the challenge? Sri Aurobindo and the mother take the challenge. So they take a human body and on their body, they allow the supramental consciousness to work upon their body. And after they have reasonably done it to a point, Sri Aurobindo in 1926 and the mother, then they start doing this on a small group of disciples. What is the experiment, if you want to call it? How the human consciousness will react to the pressure and presence of the supramental force. So we see all kinds of reactions coming up. And that gives us the secret of transformation. So how does transformation proceed? And yes, of course, just to finish the story, 1956, when there is a, that's a long story, I am not going into it. Finally, that supramental consciousness and force comes down, that gates are open, it establishes upon earth and it is molding human life. So how can we participate in this process? Coming to the practical part. So this is the practice of this yoga. We cannot directly come in contact with the supramental force. Theoretically we can. There are people who say supermind is active. Now it is part of the earth. Why can't you call, pull, come in contact? Same problem. We don't know what is our inner state, inner preparation. And if we try to call it, pull it, chances are our mind will be dislocated, heart will shatter into pieces, and body we don't know what is going to happen because it cannot contain. So the process is open to the mother. Now, when we open to the mother, what does the mother do? She knows exactly, because force is force. Force doesn't care. It's almost like suddenly you open yourself to something very tremendous and powerful, to light, sunlight, for example. And the other is you use a filter through which you direct the light. So the mother acts as a filter between the supramental consciousness and us. She has received it. She is there in the earth. She is there. She and Sri Aurobindo and the mother in the supramental bodies. And depending on how we open and how much we are ready, she starts directing this supramental force onto the different parts of her nature. What are the parts that first undergo a change? The parts that are most ready. Readiness is equal to wideness, plasticity, strength, endurance. Because the process is not easy. It is a slow baking. So for example, when it starts working in the mind, somebody's mind may be more ready, somebody's heart may be more ready, somebody's even body may be more ready. So when it works upon the mind, what will happen? Now it's a completely new consciousness. All our mental ideas, ideologies, viewpoints, opinions, they are shattered. But when she does it in a very nice way. She does not break it like that. Sometimes she can do it. But generally, slowly she molds it, a change begins to come. You will see this very clearly in people within the ashram, which is something very difficult for people to understand. I am not talking of everybody, but many people in the ashram. If you look at it, I have met many of the old sadhaks. Their mind had a kind of wideness which normally one cannot find ordinarily in life. Even in so-called societies which claim to be wide. They understand. And I have seen people, their understanding of human nature, they were so much more generous and tolerant towards so-called errors, mistakes. In fact, they knew this is the passage. They would not condemn anybody. They would not be condescending. This was a sign, because I noticed it, that how they are looking at things is very different from the way, we would look at it. And I have several examples. One of them I have told about that lady who had a friend, and how the mother explained that their way of looking is not at all according to their conventional social consciousness or moral consciousness. They see things as human difficulties and people going through it. So this is the first thing, that the mind begins to, the consciousness of the mind begins to become wider and plastic, until this vastness starts jutting on to infinite. So what does it mean when the mind opens to infinite? No preconceived ideas or notions. So what knowledge is needed, that knowledge will come at the point when it needs to become, and that knowledge will be very comprehensive, very total, very complete. But you can't turn that knowledge into a system. The moment people try to turn knowledge into a system, this even Buddha knew this, then there is a problem. For instance, if you give a remedy to everybody, everybody must bow down to the mother and Sri Aurobindo and treat them as God. Then you are being religious. It shows that you are not in contact with the new consciousness. Because that new consciousness will operate in very different ways, taking people differently. They are on different stages of evolution. or you cut life into a book of rules, do's and don'ts, again you are not in contact with the supramental consciousness, because it doesn't operate like that. It is all comprehensive, all understanding of the, takes the entire panorama of human consciousness, and to one person it works in one way, to another person it works in another way. That's why people can't understand why there is a Dilip Kumar Roy, why there is Sahanadi, why there is a Pavitra Da, why there is Champak Lalji, Nalini Da, Amrit Da, all very different. Pranab Da, very, very different. And with each one, the Divine Mother deals in a very different way. At one point, she even jokingly remarked that if Rabindra Ji became a trustee, he would see only one thing about the aspirants, only work. No other criteria he will have. If Pranabda became a trustee, then he will see only physically he is adaptable or not. So that's how she knew each one is different. So mind begins to change. But at the same time, it doesn't easily change. So all its preconceived ideas initially create a resistance. And these, just as the new consciousness finds support above, so these preconceived ideas are through centuries of evolution. And they are supported by the subconscious habit. I'll give one example, very simple example, which people would have observed nowadays. 30 years back or 40 years back, could one ever imagine, at least in Indian setting, and I think more or less it's there outside also, that a boy and a girl could be friends without anything else? Very difficult to even imagine or conceive. Many places still it is difficult to conceive that they can be friends without being anything else. There is a kind of transcending of the certain boundaries. But today, more and more, this is becoming like a norm. It is like when you... So there is a conservative outlook and there is a new outlook where the relation between a man and a woman is not seen only as a relation of physical kind. There was an old world mindset. And this is only one example. In terms of job, see how the whole conception has changed. Money, politics. Politics is one example we can take. It's the most resisting part. Same with finances. For instance, if somebody told in politics, old time, you have a party system. But how will the new consciousness look at politics? It will look at politics as the joining of different parties. And each bringing its own strength, like a yagya. So if you look at it from that standpoint, coalition politics is not necessarily an evil thing. We may find it difficult to understand at this point of time. Look at the financial world. You know what mother said, something which in recent elections somebody had made that remark, because obviously they don't understand it in the right way, but these ideas are floating here, there, everywhere. The mother was, and Sri Aurobindo, they did not believe in inheritance. Spoke about abolishing inheritance. In Auroville, you don't inherit anything. And it's something seen from one point of view, a beautiful thing. But of course, the way it is presented, it is completely distorted. And I don't want to go into that. But basically, this money to be kept locked, used only for a private aggrandizement, is not the right use of money. In the new consciousness, money will be seen very differently. And these two are the most resistant parts. The financial world and the political world. But we see it is changing. Democracy, communism, capitalism, socialism, none of these. What is the ideal state of mankind? Again, it is very surprising. Why? Because these ideas are floating in the air. But they are being caught by the ignorant, unprepared human mind. What is the ideal state of... political system, if we can call it a system. Swami Vivekananda only hinted at it, and the mother spoke about it very clearly. There is an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, and he says the anarchic state. But anarchy, he says, cautions, prematurely will lead to utter disorder and confusion. Anarchy is generally a disintegrating force. But what is meant by anarchy? Divine anarchy, where each one will discover the divine principle within and govern his life by that. So just imagine how these new ideas get distorted. We see its classic example in the ashram. Minimum of rules. When mother was asked, she used the word minimum of rules, maximum of freedom. So you don't have any fixed rules. You don't have a formal dress code. You don't have a daily routine which everybody, it's applicable to everybody. But from within you grow and decide. So there are many new things which are going to come, and the human mind, you see how it resists. It will resist these new ideas. It will throw up even doubts, because these changes are going to take place whether we like it or not. And the human mind will throw doubts. So doubts in the human mind is resistance. Doubt, is it really Satyog? Is it really supramental? Are they really divine? The most fundamental doubt. Why? Because there is a pressure to change. It associates the idea of divinity with a particular dress, with a particular language, with a particular way of life. So all these resistances are going to come up. People could not accept the mother as divine. For what a silly reason. Once it was because she is, why is she wearing lipstick? Why is she wearing beautiful sari? And at one point, why did she have an illness? Because we have our idea of divine. And we cannot understand. So you see how these things were slowly. And that's one reason why people are unable to as easily accept the mother as Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo, though he is vaster than infinite, a word can be used like that, but he fits into the Indian traditional mindset of a yogi. He is in dhoti, he sits, he has done ekantik sadhana with mother because she is infinite. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says even gods cannot understand a play. And she is in every activity. She is playing tennis, she is joking around, she is busy, super busy from morning till night. She is not chanting Sanskrit slokas. She is speaking in French. She is wearing salwar suit, or she can wear pant shirt also she has worn when she is in Japan. So any kind of activity, she would bring the divine presence. So the human mind is likely to meet with a lot of resistance even within the ashram. That's why slowly, slowly they prepared us. If you go back to the ashram pictures in 1926, 27, 28, early part, you will see all the women are wearing saris with a little bit of, not ghungat, but covered head. And men are all, you will see, looking like whatever the traditional image of yogis is. So people get very impressed, even, oh, the great ones. No, great ones is fine. But so how did she do it? When the playground started, she made a playground dress. Half pant and shirt. And a kitty cap for girls. Now you see, this was a radical. She is very practically, she prepares and changes. There the boys and girls started mingling. So somebody asked her. She said, can't you forget that you are a boy and a girl? Now you see, in the ashram school, it's very difficult to understand. But that's how she brings a change. If you directly open, imagine 1926, Sri Aurobindo and the mother are 1,000 years into the future. What would have happened to everybody's understanding? Even as of now, it is so difficult. So when it works in the mind, it opens up all these windows. Still you are freed from all conceptions, systems, theories, preconceived ideas. And the mind is just open to the infinite. Whatever knowledge is required, it just comes, enters, is done, and that's it. That moment is over. You can't say that every time you will do the same thing, speak the same thing, think in the same way, even about the same subject. And then the same thing starts working in the organ of speech because it externalizes. So when it works upon the speech, again, human speech is not at all adapted to the new consciousness because of various reasons, limitations of speech. It's not only about words. Speech is one of the signs of whatever consciousness is inside. That's why to speak abusive words, to speak, you know, words full of ill will, all that is so dangerous. It degrades the consciousness. So slowly that gets modified till speech becomes the natural chime of truth. So whatever is spoken either turns out to be truth or is a truth speech. And that's why as we grow conscious in speech, one becomes so aware that if you speak something very loosely, you know that it has an impact because it's the divine force which is flowing through it. And if you have said something which is loose, like a loose cannon, it can have its repercussions because it's no more your words, no more your mouth she is using. So the restraint of speech, the right mother has spoken about tapasya of speech. And then of course the heart again. So what happens in the heart? Normally, how does the heart operate? Its idea of love and affection is give and take. That's its idea of love and affection. And along with that, its basis of love is attraction. Attraction, attachment, plus give and take is human love. I think I have not missed anything. I am talking of a good human love, not the worst kind of human love. That's the normal one. There is attraction, there is attachment. So what happens when the attraction goes away? It will go away after some time. Then only attachment remains. So when only attachment remains, but no more attraction, then it's a burden. You're bearing a burden. You can't help it. So because you're no more attracted, but you're bearing a burden. And along with that, give and take. What happens if giving stops from one side? Then there is the same love turns into hate. And then you may get attracted somewhere else. So all kinds of possibilities within which the human love moves. So what happens when that love is touched by the divine love? So first of all these basis of love in human life starts with some kind of attraction. Attraction may be to the body, it can be to a voice, it can even be strangely to the name of a person. It could be so many ways. It can just, you know, you hear a name and it's a very subtle, refined kind of attraction. That's why you will see it in Nala Damayanti. They hear the name and that name is enough to start a process. So many ways it operates. So many networks are operating. But there is another basis of love where none of these is operating. There is a kind of direct communication with the depths. Now when this happens, all our social paradigms and ways of understanding are going to go for a toss. Because it's going to constantly bring into the deeper heart something else. And what will that heart see, deeper heart? Only truth, beauty and good. So all that we see, defects, difficulties, all these, we will not see that. We will see them as process of evolution, difficulties of the way. So when it comes in the heart, then again the heart may revolt against the divine. It may, usually the heart should be enamored of the divine. That's how the yoga working in the heart proceeds. But it may turn away, which is very dangerous. It may get distracted, deviated, all kinds of things may happen. So all the hidden resistances, because this heart which should be enamored of the divine, suddenly gets distracted. There are people, you'll be surprised, who have lived in ashram for decades. So one of them went to Odisha, stayed there for 1 year with someone. How the heart can be completely taken away. Dilip Kumar Roy is another classic example. Heart can even be overtaken by a kind of ideal. And that's why it's so important. The line is so thin. One may suddenly feel misled and say, no, I must take care of the country first. That was A.B. Purani's problem. And when Sri Aurobindo says, no, you are meant for this. Of course, patriotic sentiments are consistent with yoga. That's one thing. And leaving the yoga and entering into the field of politics is a very different thing. Those who are destined or marked for it, it's fine. That's a different matter altogether. But those who undertake the yoga. So heart can get drawn by so many things, so many ways. It's nishtha, ek nishtha, maybe totally broken aside. So while ek nishtha means you may have relations with this entire world of human beings, of animals, plants, everything, but always keeping the one divine in the center. If anything is coming between you and the mother, then that is serious. But that's what happens. It has happened. So these resistance may come up. One may even start feeling divine does not love me, which is the, you know, I don't love the divine, divine does not love me. All this can completely, because these are hidden things. They come up. Then again, when it enters into life, up till here, there is still okay. But when it enters into the lower life parts, ambitions may rise up. And along with that, impulses which were held back by the normal human moral sense. Sex, then greed, fear. I know of somebody who used to be literally taken up by fear. And he knows it is irrational. And he would confess to me at an old age, he says, humko bahut dar lagta hai, hamara problem dar ka hai. Fear. He was in grip of fear. Even now you will see sometime people have strange reactions. I don't know whether you have noticed or not. I know of some cases where looking at Mother and Sri Aurobindo's picture, people have felt fear. One person I know, he felt fear, so he turned the picture this way. And he eventually totally lost his head, became completely a what we call as schizophrenic. Very brilliant man. But the calendar, when at night he would look at mother's calendar, he would feel a strange fear. There is no logic to it. So what all is hidden inside us, we don't know. Why does fear come with the presence of the divine? Because you know now your individuality is gone. Which one doesn't want to lose? And divine will snatch it away. So actually it should be a joyous thing. That's why the mother keeps saying, approach with the idea of self-giving. When you keep on doing this, that I want to give myself to the divine, then if you are face to face with the divine, the urge will be, take me. But if self-giving is not there, there is only want, or a mixture, then those parts which are wanting, they will feel fear. So there were people who with Mother and Sri Aurobindo, oh, mother will scold me, mother is angry with me. They would not even come for darshan. Oh, mother must be angry with me. And they were interpreting everything of mother with fear, suspicion. She did not smile at me. And fear is a great impurity. So when it touches these parts, so suddenly the sexual parts which were held in check, they suddenly rise up, and it can, one can go completely berserk if you know, the higher parts have not been changed. So this is a gad, anger. One never used to feel angry, and anger, impatience, all these things come up. So this is, Sri Aurobindo says, the battleground of this yoga. And since these forces have the greatest hold on the outer consciousness, therefore the outer is the last to change. So you will see people are undergoing change inside. They inside, no, it's not how I should be. They are overtaken by this force, which is now coming from the subconscious, supported by the adverse forces and hostile and everything, or waves of depression. Why? Because the vital desires are not satisfied. Restlessness and depression, both. When there is pressure on the lower vital, it becomes restless. Sometimes this restless can take strange. I want an experience. It can take any form. One wants to be a yogi. One wants to be a sadhak. One wants to be this, that, 100 things. Okay, वर्ल्ड का नहीं है तो भगवान के दिशा में कोई एक्सपीरियंस आ जाए, यू नो दैट बिकम. सो दिस रेस्टलेसनेस एंड डिप्रेशन आर बिकॉज ऑफ द डिजायर सेल्फ अराइजिंग राइट फ्रॉम द बॉटम ऑफ द वेल. सी हाउ दादा यूज टू गो थ्रू दिस. ही वुड गो थ्रू फिट्स ऑफ डिप्रेशन एंड फिट्स ऑफ समटाइम्स एंगर. वंस इज द फेमस इंस्टेंस वेयर ही लेफ्ट द रैकेट और थ्रू द रैकेट, आई डोंट रिमेंबर, एंड स्टार्टेड वॉकिंग अवे in the middle of the tennis, and the mother stopped the game and she went with him. And one day in one of his those depressed states, she caught hold of, because he was working on the body, these forces are operating very near this lower vital and physical. She took him to Sri Aurobindo and told him, literally almost pushing him at his feet, he is prone to this. And Sri Aurobindo looked and Dada writes it. He said, He would get very restless. That's why you will see that, you know, he would go long distance, long drives, famous for that. And then finally, he writes in 60s, how slowly these things started becoming quiet. So it's a long journey. He came in 40s and with direct working of the mother. So don't expect miracles here. And that's why the physical education, because much of this energy can be washed out into the body. And then in the body, so all the tamas related to food, actually food and sex, are most connected with the body. Sleep can begin to become heavy, sluggish, inertia. So all these things, and if the body is not ready, palpitation in the heart, cracking of the bones. So why? Because this new consciousness, this force begins to work for the transformation. And this is when you have opened to the mother and she is slowly baking you in the divine oven. So this is the process. Who will go through it? Who can endure? And who has faith? You have to endure the process. And see, people don't talk about this part because everybody, you see a nice picture, rosy picture, finished product. But see, just imagine Amal Kiran. At one point he says, I don't think I can stay here, because he was besieged by one kind of difficulty. There was another who became a film actor outside. Every night he would go to some place for whatever people do at night. And he had to be pulled out from there in the morning. Amalda had to go and bring him back. What patience Sri Aurobindo and the mother had. And yet they saw his beautiful side. The most authentic Indian voice in English poetry. But he couldn't stay ultimately. The pressure was too much. So it's a pressure of inner change. It's not easy. People don't understand, because those who are going through it in the oven, they know. Outside it is written divine oven, so or the divine washing machine. It can be very disorienting. So what helps you? Faith. Whatever may happen, the mother is with me. Even if life turns topsy-turvy. And endurance, because the process can be sometimes very exacting. You think you have overcome a difficulty? See? How quickly I could get free of the sexual impulse, of anger and fear. Say, oh, is it? Okay. You are besieged. Again and again and again. Mother says, perseverance should be such that you should be ready to get up 10,000 times if you fall 10,000 times. Calculate 10,000. By divided by 365. I literally did this once calculation. Because every day if you fall, he says that should be the spirit. So this yoga cannot be done by those who give up readily. I don't think I can do it. So endurance, faith, openness, plasticity, wideness, surrender, aspiration, perseverance, patience. This is what is required for this yoga. Once the door is open, she will work. you sit for meditation or you don't sit for meditation, it's a 24/7 process. You can't tell the mother, mother, now I'm sitting for meditation, now you can try. She says, no, this is not the time. That part is all asleep. When you're sitting in meditation, I'll call you inside, tell a nice lullaby, make you feel good. It's required, because then, you know, that time she nourishes us from inside, like a baby who has gone to sleep. Sleep, higher sleep. But then when the baby is playing, that's when he's likely to get hurt and injured. So this yoga, once started, is that 24/7 into 365 into number of lifetimes process. And when it will start, to each one it is different. That's why there is a long period of preparation. But once it starts, then the transformation is inevitable. You just can't help it. So, sooner the better. Surrender. Don't keep all these notions. Don't try to judge things. This is a very big problem with the human mind. It judges the divine. It judges human beings. It judges everybody. It ends up judging oneself. Don't judge. You don't know what is happening. We don't know what's happening in the world. When we are in that state of that, I don't know, then knowledge will pour in. So this is in a nutshell the process. It begins from above downwards. It is still okay as long as the mind and heart are being touched. But when it touches the lower vital covered motives, they will express in a very nice way. Because that is the place of the gad of the asura. And then when it touches the body, so one should know it's a long journey, but a beautiful journey. Why beautiful? After all this, somebody may say, are you encouraging or discouraging? It's not about encouraging, discouraging. Those who are marked for it will get into it. It is, does not depend on your choice of surface being. You are picked up, like Savitri comes and picks up Satyavan. And if you are picked up and chosen, of course, Shobhinda says you can turn away till the irrevocable transformation. That's the only tragedy that can ever happen. But generally, one goes through. So what sustains you in this journey? After hearing all this, some people may say, oh my God, the mother. When you know that mother is with you, when you are conscious of her presence inside, don't let it get veiled. Sometimes it will get veiled. But remember, oh, she is there. Remember, then it will open. Once you know you are with the mother, that nothing can deter you, nothing can discourage you, nothing can depress you, whatever be the outer circumstances, whatever be the inner challenges, you know that she is holding you. That's why the mother, the mother, the mother. All transformation starts with mother. Surrender to the mother. It proceeds by surrendering more and more to the mother. Do we have an option anyways? And it culminates by a grand, complete, detailed surrender to the mother. Yeah.